Now, there's a few ways to manage hay fever. Antihistamines, such as Claritin and Zyrtec, immunotherapy, which involves repeated injections of very small doses of the things you're allergic to, and acupuncture. Many are not even aware of acupuncture being an option for managing their hay fever, but it's a treatment that's been proven effective many times in recent clinical trials. What we don't yet fully understand is how acupuncture helps hay fever, and what is happening in the immune system. This is the question Dr. John McDonald, PhD, set out to answer in his research with Griffith University. Dr. John, can you tell us about your research?
I started researching in 2009 at Griffith University. So the study wasn't asking the question, does acupuncture work for allergic rhinitis or hay fever? But, okay, it works, the research has been done. What changes in the immune system are correlated with those improvements in symptoms? So we're trying to dig into the mechanism behind what was happening. And so that was our primary outcome, and the improvements were our secondary outcome. And so those results were published in July 2016 in Annals of Allergy, Asthma, Immunology. And that's the end of that particular, well, not quite the end, there's another paper in that yet. And I've done numerous conference presentations on that around the place. So most recently at Harvard Medical School in Boston last year, the Society for Acupuncture Research. Fabulous conference. A fair few of the main researchers in acupuncture from around the world were there. So had more interesting and intelligent conversations there in 3 days than I usually have in a year. So it was hog heaven. Just loved it. Fantastic.
So what were the changes you observed in the participants of your trial?
Okay, well, the question we originally asked, what changes in the immune system correlate with the improvements in signs and symptoms? Strictly speaking, we didn't actually find that. We found changes in the immune system, and we found changes in the symptoms, but the time frames were different. And so there were things that changed in the immune system and then went back towards where they were while the symptoms continued to improve. And so we still can't really say we know what the changes are. So are there changes in the immune system? Absolutely. Are there improvements in symptoms? Definitely. Do those changes relate directly to those symptoms? Well, not really. There's a lot more there that we haven't found yet.
So what have you learned during the process of this study?
Well, certainly one thing that's interesting is and this is not just our study, this is other studies as well, is that when the treatment stops, the improvements don't. The improvements keep happening, and so people keep getting better and better and better after the treatment stops. And that's really interesting because none of the short-term mediators that we looked at could possibly account for that, because they change and then within 72 hours are about back where they started. But in other studies, it's been found that 3 months after treatment, people are still improving more than they were when they had the last treatment. At 6 months, they're still better than they were when they started, but it's starting to taper off a bit. So somewhere between 3 and 6 months, the improvement plateaus and starts to just come back a little bit. But still 6 months after treatment, they're still heaps better off than they were when they started. So none of the things we looked at can account for a change that lasts for 3 to 6 months. And so that's our new mystery, if you like. And so really it turned out that there were two questions there that we thought were one, which is what happens in the short term? And how do those repeated short-term changes lead to a lasting modulation in the immune system? Because you've got to say that's what it is. It can't be anything else. There's a lasting change in the immune system, but we don't yet understand how repeated short-term changes produce lasting change. And that really is kind of the story about the whole of acupuncture, really, is if you do something often enough for long enough, it'll produce lasting changes that can go out for months or in some studies even years after the treatment stops. And very few treatments will do that. Very few treatments continue to change or set up some sort of momentum in the body so the body keeps getting better and better and better after you stop the treatment. But acupuncture does, and that's makes it even more fascinating than what it was before.
If the improvements you're seeing are not matching up with changes in biomarkers, is that just the placebo effect at work?
Well, that's a good question. In terms of our study, the idea that placebo effect was at work in the study is pretty well refuted by the exit debrief questionnaire. So we had three arms. One group got real acupuncture, one group got sham acupuncture, one group got no acupuncture. They all continued on their normal relief medications like Zyrtec or Claritin or whatever it was for acute symptoms. But they'd been taking those before the study anyway, and also it was an ethics requirement that people are not deprived of a medication while they participate in the study. And they recorded their medication use. In the real acupuncture group, there was a reduction in medication use, not in the other two groups. But having said that, the exit debrief questionnaire asked the people in the real and the sham acupuncture groups at the end of the study, which group do you think you're in? And what was interesting there was we found about 5% in each group said, look, I really can't tell. I can't make a call either way. But almost exactly the same number in the real group thought they got real and sham. In the sham group thought they got real or sham. Now, the consequence of that is that if you've got a placebo effect happening in the real acupuncture group, oh, I knew I was getting the real treatment and that's what made me get better. Or in the sham group, oh, I thought I was in the sham group, so that's a nocebo effect. So I don't expect to get better because I think I'm in the sham group. I'm not getting the real treatment. So this is not going to work for me. And so you'd expect the placebo effect to work in the real group and the nocebo effect to work in the sham group in the groups that were real and sham. By the same token, the people in the sham group who thought they were getting real acupuncture, they should have got a better outcome than the people that thought they were getting sham. The people in the real acupuncture group who thought they weren't getting the real thing should have got a worse result than the people in the other group. And there was no difference in either group. Between people that thought they were getting real, people that thought they were getting sham, there was no difference. And so what that means is that you can't account for differences between the real and the sham group because the distribution of belief between the two groups is exactly the same. And so that you can really say that for any study in which an exit debrief questionnaire is done, and the real and the sham group had the same level of expectation about what was happening, then that should affect the outcome in exactly the same way. And so there should be no difference between the two groups. But there was.
This is Key Health Radio on 2XXFM 98.3, People Powered Radio.
We're talking hay fever with Dr. John McDonald on Key Health Radio, 2XXFM, People Powered Radio. So John, did you observe differences between the group receiving the sham treatment and the group receiving the real acupuncture treatment?
The big difference was that 1 week after the treatment stopped, on some of the markers, but not the others, only some markers, people in the sham group had improved. And so we did three different questionnaires to measure symptoms. According to two of those questionnaires, there was no change. On the third one, that improved because there were different questions being asked. On 4 week follow-up, so 3 weeks later, 4 weeks after the treatment ended, the sham group people that had improved were all getting much worse again, whereas the people in the real acupuncture group at 4 week follow-up were much better than they were at week nine. And so you can see this huge difference opening up between the real and the sham group between week one and week four of follow-up. And so even when there were changes in the sham group, they didn't last. The changes in the real group just kept going and going and going. And so that was one of the really big differences. Of course, there were many things. Like, for example, we graphed seven symptoms on a daily basis right through the trial. And of those seven symptoms, six of them improved significantly. Five of them improved significantly of the seven symptoms in the real group. In the sham group, only one. And two just didn't happen. So that was sinus pain and postnasal drip. Those two symptoms didn't improve in anybody. So that might mean that acupuncture doesn't work for those two symptoms, or it might mean that allergic rhinitis treatment doesn't fix those two symptoms. I really don't know that. You have to do other studies to find that out. But unrefreshed sleep, that was the only symptom that improved in the sham group. And so we mapped the seven symptoms. Five of them get better in the real group. Only one gets better in the sham group. And that's a pretty clear difference as well.
What were those five symptoms that improved?
Itchy eyes, itchy nose, sneezing, runny nose, and unrefreshed sleep. That's the five, yeah. And the nasal congestion, that was another symptom we measured, but it wasn't one of those seven that we did daily. We only did that at weeks, at 1 week follow-up and 4 weeks follow-up. We didn't do it every day.
So those five symptoms are the bulk of the hay fever response.
Yes, indeed. And the other thing that tells us, because we're looking for mechanism, we're trying to say what's happening here physiologically, itchy eyes, itchy nose, runny nose, sneezing, they're all symptoms mediated by the same receptor. And that receptor is called the transient receptor potential vanilloid 1, TRPV1 for short. Now, TRPV1 is something experienced by protesters in demonstrations when police hit them in the face with capsicum spray, because capsicum contains capsaicin. That's the active ingredient. And that's the specific chemical that activates the TRPV1. And so the purpose of capsicum spray is to give people acute, severe allergic rhinitis. So the eyes water, the nose runs, a person sneezes, and they just feel terrible and they can't think straight, which is pretty much how people are when they have severe hay fever. And so it's hay fever in a can. And so that shows how the TRPV1 receptor works. And so those four symptoms, if they all got better, then it's very likely that the TRPV1 receptor was downregulated. So it was reduced in either sensitivity or expression, probably both. So just from anecdotes that patients told, an example, somebody said, whenever I visit my mother's house, the cat comes and sits on my lap and I hate it because I just scream, you know, my eyes and my nose scream, I sneeze, it's terrible. I go there once and for days I'm just dreadful. But I went to my mother's the other day and the cat sat on my lap the whole time I was there. Nothing at all. And so I did attempt to avoid collecting anecdotes from patients, because when you're doing a blinded study, you don't want to ask people how they are, because you don't know. Because if they're getting better, then they might think they're in the real group. And if they're not getting better, they might think they're in the sham group. And you're trying not to even invite them to think about that. So it's very counterintuitive. So how is the weather today? It's so counterintuitive not to ask people when they come in, how are you? It feels really weird. Had to practice that for 3 years. How is the weather?
John, in your study, there was a specific number and frequency of treatments. How did you decide on that?
Okay, it was taken from previous studies, basically. So what I did was I looked at all the studies that had been done previously and looked at all the ones that were successful and all the ones that weren't successful. And there was an interesting pattern there. Every time somebody used more than 12 treatments and treated twice a week or more, they got really good results. Less than that, they got either mixed results, poor results, no results. And so that was the number we started out with, 12 treatments twice a week. However, a study that had been published shortly before ours in Australia at RMIT used 16 treatments twice a week. And so 8 weeks instead of 6 weeks. We thought about that and came to the conclusion, since a previous study has been successful using this, if we use 12 instead of 16 and we didn't get an outcome, we'd be kicking ourselves. And so we couldn't really justify, even to the funding body, why we're going to use less than 16 when that's what's been used by a recently published successful study. So, okay, we'll just bite the bullet. We'll go 16 instead of 12. And so that's how we came to it from basing it on previous successful studies.
What percentage of the study participants had improvements?
That was 86.1%. And so basically out of 36 people, 5 people didn't get better at any at They just didn't get better. Nothing happened. And for the other 31, they had significant improvement. And so if you look at the other studies, they range from about 82 to about 95% responder rates in allergic rhinitis studies.
So people having 12 to 16 acupuncture treatments twice a week have good odds of improving.
Yes, there's a very good chance. And when you look at what else is out there, 2 years of immunotherapy and you don't get 86% responder rate. And so I have seen varying figures. The allergy specialist who was on our team, I understood him to be saying it's probably about 50%, but I have seen studies saying it's higher than that, maybe 70%. But even still, 2 years of immunotherapy is an awful lot of time, energy, and it's quite expensive, and you're not really guaranteed of an outcome. And the other thing about immunotherapy is whilst it may treat specific symptoms, the general quality of life benefits that you also see in acupuncture studies don't tend to be seen in the immunotherapy. And so you'd have to say that you've got a better chance of having a better outcome with acupuncture than you would with, say, immunotherapy.
How do antihistamines compare with what acupuncture can do?
Well, in our study, we were using both. And so people were at liberty to use non-steroidal antihistamines throughout the study as relief medication. Some people just used their medications every day, all the way through the study, regardless of what their symptoms were doing. And some people used a lot less. But if you look at studies where it's acupuncture only versus medication only, the acupuncture has been both superior at the time and also at 6 month follow-up. 6 months after your last Zyrtec, it's doing nothing. 6 months after your last acupuncture, you're still well ahead of where you were before you started. And so there's the longevity of the results. And the other thing is, if you know anybody who is actually happy to be taking Claritin every day for the rest of their lives, I'd like to meet them because I haven't found one yet.
What level of evidence is there now supporting the use of acupuncture to treat hay fever?
What I would say is that the evidence level on hay fever has been increasing all the time. And so in April 2015, one of the main American ENT groups, the Otolaryngology Head Neck Surgery Foundation, included acupuncture as a treatment option in their clinical practice guidelines. And so it said, for patients who prefer not to take medication, a clinician can provide acupuncture or refer to an acupuncturist for treatment. And that was given a grade B level of recommendation on the basis of the evidence to that point. Since then, there's been two systematic reviews on acupuncture published. The most recent of those in 2015, after that recommendation was given, said the following: acupuncture is safe, acupuncture is effective, acupuncture is efficacious, acupuncture is cost effective. And so as far as the evidence is concerned, that pretty well nails it. So where to next? Well, the recommendation after that was, now it's time for more head-to-head studies. In other words, comparing acupuncture to other treatments. So there's no studies where acupuncture has been directly compared with immunotherapy, and there's no studies where acupuncture has been directly compared with nasal sprays. So there's four studies, and again, that's not many, four studies where acupuncture has been compared with medication, your Claritines and Zyrtecs, but there's no studies comparing acupuncture and nasal sprays, which the pharmaceutical companies are now advertising on television are much better than the tablets. So I believe the line is tablets deal with one allergic factor, but the spray deals with six, and so it's superior. And certainly it appears that the nasal sprays are superior to the oral medications. So no one's yet done a comparison between acupuncture and nasal sprays, acupuncture and immunotherapy. And so that's really where the research needs to be next. So having established that acupuncture has a place in the healthcare system, the next question is, where is that place in the healthcare system? And so on the totem pole, how high does it sit? Does it sit above or below immunotherapy and nasal sprays? Is it more cost effective? Is it safer? Etc. So often that factor, particularly when you compare it with medications, in most cases, acupuncture is found to be safer because it has a lot fewer adverse effects than most medications when they're tested against each other head to head.
Key Health Radio, brought to you by Key Acupuncture. More information, visit keyacupuncture.com.au.
We're talking hay fever with Dr. John McDonald on Key Health Radio, 2XXFM People Powered Radio.
So John, can acupuncture cure hay fever?
There weren't a lot of people in our study who were completely free of all symptoms. That is, that they didn't respond at all to the things they'd responded to in the past. There were some, but there weren't a lot. And so what we can say can be expected is a reduction in sensitivity. And so the example of the cat sitting on the lap. So once walking into the house where there's been a cat, the person's screaming, now the cat can sit on their lap, they don't have a problem. And so do they still have specific IgE for cat dander in their system? Probably do. One of the things that we did see a reduction in the biomarkers we measured was dust mite specific immunoglobulin. But it wasn't a big change. It was a small change. And so there was a big change in symptoms, but only a small change in the specific IgE. And so that suggests that there was some other processes at work there that reduced the person's tendency to react to whatever it is, the dust mite, the animal dander, the grass pollen, what have you. And so the immune system is made less sensitive to whatever it is I was sensitive to before. But probably those IgEs haven't disappeared. The IgE itself is reduced so that the person still has the capacity to react to what they were responsive to before. So in that sense, no, they're not cured. They're not. But they are less likely to have symptoms. And so if somebody who has terrible hay fever and is responding on a daily basis to dust and pollen and cats and dogs and all manner of things can reach a point where only occasionally do they actually get symptoms, and that's because they've had a massive exposure to something, that's still a significant improvement in their quality of life.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Dr. John McDonald, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
If you'd like to read the full paper, it's called Effect of Acupuncture on House Dust Mite Specific IgE, Substance B, and Symptoms in Persistent Allergic Rhinitis. The link is up on John's website, which is southportacupuncture.org. We'll also post a link up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/keyacupuncture. And if you'd like to continue the conversation, post a question up on Facebook or send us an email at keyhealthradio@keyacupuncture.com.au. Now, Key Acupuncture is spelled KIACUPUNCTURE. Join us next week on 2XX.
You can join the team from Key Acupuncture at the Albert Hall for the Living Green Festival this Sunday, the 2nd of October. Now, Albert Hall is on Commonwealth Avenue in between the Commonwealth Bridge and the Hyatt Hotel. The team from Key Acupuncture will be there doing free 15-minute evaluation consultations, so if you've got any questions about how acupuncture might help you, come along and ask one of the team. I'll also be giving a talk on stage at 2:30 in the afternoon on the topic of sustainable healthcare. That's all for us today. Don't forget to join us next week here on 2XXFM 98.3 People Powered Radio. I'm Dr. Callie Antilli, CMD, registered acupuncturist, Chinese medicine doctor, and director at Key Acupuncture at Moore Street in the city. Signing off.
Thanks for listening to Key Health Radio. Join us next time for the very latest in medical research and technology, expert interviews, and amazing stories.